Welcome, everyone, to the Friday night public discussion group of Perfecting Horizons Institute. We are in paper 50, section 5, which is old single column, page 576. All right, so this is a very important section. In the Revelation, once you begin to reflect on civilization, it's one of the important developmental sequences to civilization. That it's very important to kind of always have in mind, as a backdrop to your reflections, whenever the revelators are talking about any of those issues of progress throughout the ages of history. And so you say that and you're going, okay, well, I thought this was a paper about the planetary princes. Right? So it's just very important to not abstract this section out of this paper. I mean, it's the most burning question you should have in your mind right up front is, why is this section in this paper and not, up in part three, in one of those papers about the about civilization?
There's another paper with a section titled Progressive Civilization.
Right, I mean, it's just this burning question that's just right in front of you if you're, if you're thinking about the whole book. What's going on here? So there must be some very important reason to keep in mind the fact a planetary prince and his staff as you reflect on this. We'll be looking for that very definitively. When you think about what sections we've read already, I mean, all you really need to keep in immediate mind is the fact we're reading about planetary princes. And then let's jump into this section on the nature of civilization as a progressing sequence. We'll get to some of that terminology right towards the beginning here. Let's just jump in and see how they start us out here.
Section 5, Progressive Civilization. The loyal princes of the inhabited worlds are permanently attached to the planets of their original assignment. Paradise suns and their dispensations may come and go, but a successful planetary prince continues on as the ruler of his realm. His work is quite independent of the missions of the higher suns, being designed to foster the development of planetary civilization.
Okay, so that last statement, you see them stressing that point that they made very directly, just before this, that the primary purpose of a planetary prince's mission is civilizational uplifter, right? He and his staff come as civilizational uplifters. And as they're just pointing out there, that's not something you just do for a little while and move on to other things, right? That's something that is there from the very beginning to the very end. You're always attempting to further progress civilization. And as they stress, they're quite independent of whatever else is going on, right? Michael comes and goes even on our world, to really kind of put a point on it. But the Planetary Prince's administration is supposed to be forever. And so the fact that we don't have that, see, that has to have huge consequences, right? All right, and then the terminology. So you notice the adjective in the title. First of all, you got the word civilization. So let me just stress that when you think about words like society, culture, civilization, Civilization is the most human challenge of those three. Civilization is purely a choice. You know, there's measures of society and culture that come about naturally as manifestations of the functioning of the adjutants. Civilization is distinct from that natural phenomenon. It must be chosen. You know, it's fundamentally an art form. It's fundamentally artificial. And if that art form isn't recognized and maintained, in one generation it evaporates. Right? There's nothing sort of naturally ongoing about civilization. You have to be very conscious of that if it's going to be an ongoing phenomenon. Yep.
You said one generation it could evaporate?
Yeah, did you say one generation?
Did you say? Right. It was a measure of hyperbole, right? I mean, you know, right? I mean, but, you know, the point.
I think we're doomed then.
But the point that the revelers make in many places is, basically if you set up any sort of fall of Rome mentality, you know, in the populace, the moment that you take your eye off the ball is the moment that you start to descend. And, if you've taken this human phenomenon to any length, you've gone beyond an arithmetic sort of a phenomenon, and it's started to ramp up in a more geometric way. Well, if you've started ramping up in a geometric way, if you take your eye off the ball, you fall down in a geometric way. And so that initial portion of loss can be very swift, you know? You're going to lose a lot in one generation. If you are in that sort of a mode, the bigger they are, the harder they fall.
We are in that mode.
Right, yeah, we are. That's the whole point. That's why this book is in my lap, right? You know, arithmetic progressions don't lead to emergencies, really, you know? It's when you're actually bringing in spirit, so things are going geometrically, just as much as that can be creativity, it can be destructivity. Right? You can use that spirit to undo yourself very quickly, just like you can use it to do yourself very quickly. Either way. Okay? So civilization, we're talking about that full-on human thing. Right? That's, you know, like we stressed that, you know, before, remember, that the planetary prince is there to really get this human phenomenon going. And when they say progressive civilization, they are stressing that what we're going to be focusing on is the part of the sequential phenomenon that is more manifest and observable, discernible. Go into that next paragraph. Notice how you have a juxtaposition. So foster the development of planetary civilization, and then they turn right around and say the progress of civilization. Okay. So trying to get you to to use the word development to be the word associated with the aspect of the sequential phenomenon that you describe as progressing. So the progressing element is, quote-unquote, development. The perfecting aspect of the sequence is growth and is not observable by us, because that's not about a sequence of the parts. That's about the sequence of the parts in relationship to the whole, and none of us can see the whole, right? So we can't discern just how well it's going in relationship to the whole, right? Growth is never conscious, right? So that perfecting part, that relationship to the whole, that's going to be involved here, but we're focusing on the part that you can really discern and recognize, the development, and in that sense, You know, basically always when a human uses the word these days, when a human uses the word growth, they don't actually mean growth like the revelators are using the word growth. They mean development.
Yeah.
Right? As you're maturing biologically, you know, you'll say you're growing. Well, yes, okay, there is some increasing relationship to the cosmos, but that's not what we're talking about. See, obviously you're talking about development, the stuff that you can see. Right? That's development, not growth, technically, what you're pointing to. Right? If it's something I can point at, right, it's technically development. Okay? So progressive, you know, that progressing phenomenon, that issue of development, that's what we're focusing on here. Just in case, you know, you were like maybe to pull this section out of this paper and use it somewhere, you know, they embedded the planetary prints in it, right? So that you're reminded right up front there, notice it. Okay, that's what you want, that's the backdrop in, you know, in which you want to contemplate what they're about to say. Okay.
The progress of civilization is hardly alike on any two planets. The details of the unfoldment of mortal evolution are very different on numerous dissimilar worlds. Notwithstanding these many diversifications of planetary development along physical, intellectual, and social lines, all evolutionary spheres progress to certain well-defined directions.
Okay, you can just notice right there they didn't throw in spiritual in that sequence. Because again, see that, like when you're talking about that issue of growth and your relationship to the whole, obviously that's because you have a relationship to spirit, so that there can be personality identified with the phenomenon, that whole-izing influence that you have, your personality that can encompass all the aspects and bring it in relationship to the whole. So you're not talking about perfecting spirit, per se, right? You're more talking about progressing mind. Now, it is the case that the only reason that mindal selves, our mind is progressing, is because spirit has an over-controlling influence upon it. That potential is coming from spirit. But you're focusing on the more observable eye-level fact of mind, that you can be conscious of progressing mind, because that's where consciousness is in the mind. Okay, so that that's what we're getting at here, and they're reminding you of what we just read, how there's all of this variability, that's going to impact physical, intellectual, social, all the diversity of all the different planets and the different types of will creatures and all that complexity. Okay, so there's all that complexity, but there's this overarching, very definitive, sequential phenomenon that they're giving us the template for here, that is transcendent of all the minutiae, all those details. All right, so let's see here. You might just notice, that expression, in certain well-defined directions. Right? They're reminding you that you are, especially if you're talking about civilization, you're really thinking of going beyond your place-like nature, and you're thinking about really directionizing it. Civilization is a fact that's set on a course, right? And the more you can lift your head up out of the dirt and look to eternity, the better you'll be at steering that civilization. It's just like driving a car. If you're staring at the hood ornament, you're constantly, moving your hand to try to keep it, keep it between the lines. But if you set your eyes down the road, right? You can just sit, you know, you just make these almost imperceptible movements of your hand, and it goes in a nice straight line. Right? So that's, you're trying to bring in that seventh adjutant and that personal nature to really bring direction into the phenomenon. So that's why they said it that way.
Under the benign rule of a planetary prince, augmented by the material suns and punctuated by the periodic missions of the paradise suns, the mortal races on an average world of time and space will successively pass through the following seven developmental epochs.
Okay, so there's our benign dictator there, basically, the benign rule of the planetary prince. So in other words, you know, he's, as long as he's in this sort of very well-minded mode, you know, that the word benign means, you know, in a superior position, everything is going to go well. But, you know, if his mind is not well composed, you know, everything is not going to go well. So they're reminding you of that, you know, it's not going to go in well-defined directions if everyone's following him and you know, he veers off course. Okay. But obviously, if he veers off course, it's very important that you develop the ability to self-directionize. Right? Now, the use of nouns here for these periods. When they say developmental epochs right there, they're using the word epic in a just sort of a general way. I mean, you have the words epic, age, era, you know, or sort of, in a most general sense, they're all kind of just synonyms for period, you know, a period of time. Now, in historical geology, they'll use those words in very precise ways, but, you know, we're not in that mode here. But as you scan these italicized titles of these seven stages, you can see that there's a pattern. They're using these words in some patterned way. Why are they going epic, age, era? You know, and then they do it again, epic, age, era. Why are they using those three quasi-synonyms, you know, in a sequence like that? It's because, you know, if there is a subtlety of differential between them that you want to utilize, it's in this mode, where epic would be more precisely used to indicate the beginning, you know, of a big period, okay? And the word era has sort of inherent in it that you're thinking about that period all the way to the end. See, so those two words, epic and era, do have shades of bias towards beginning and end, you know, in subtle ways. You know, they don't literally mean the beginning and the end, right? But that, you see, they're playing off of that little differential, you know, that epic is not necessarily indicating something where you're taking a certain kind of mode all the way to the end. You know, it's just kind of the beginning, you know, excitement part of it, you know, maybe, right? So, see, they're doing that. So beginning, end, that's why they use those first and last in the three. And then age, you know, like if you say Bronze Age, say, you're saying that you've got this period of time, and there, you know, if you sort of just look into the core of that period of time, there's kind of a fundamental thing, and that's why you call that period the Bronze Age, that it was characterized by bronze. You know, tools. You see, so if you think about it, you're not so much looking at, well, kind of what's the gradation coming in at the beginning, or what's the tail, you know, going out the end of some period, but kind of what's the core thing, you know. See, so that's why they use it as the middle word. So just playing off of the potential, so that of those. But at the same time that they do that, they'll use, like they just did there in the preface, the word epic. For all of them, right? You know, you could use age or epic or era for all of them, you know, but in just the you know, as it's almost like a little memory aid to try to help you remember to be able to memorize this sequence. You know, commit it to memory. You know that you're gonna okay. So I remember there was one that was called the Material Comfort Era. Okay, so that would be the third one, you know, of the three. So it's trying to help you to get them sorted out in your head and be able to remember them. So, all right. So, and again, see, it's stressing, they're developmental epics. So all the stuff they're going to be talking about is something that's going to be very, you know, manifest and, you know, observable, right? Not the subtle transcendental relationship to the whole elements, you know, that are, you know, that no one can be aware of in the moment at all, you know. But those things that are, you know, you can kind of use to discern the times, the signs of the times, okay? All right, so first one here.
One, the nutrition epic. The prehuman creatures in the dawn races of primitive man are chiefly concerned with food problems. These evolving beings spend their waking hours either in seeking food or in fighting, offensively or defensively. The food quest is paramount in the minds of these early ancestors of subsequent civilization.
Okay. Now, the main thing that we want to do is obviously find the truth that's flowing through this section. All right, there's a whole bunch of, you know, enumerated on the surface boilerplate looking facts, right, which no one can obey, right? You want to obey the truth that's flowing through this section, right? So let me bring it alive a little bit by pointing out that as you reflect on this sequence, there's a couple of other sequences that it will remind you of. Those other two sequences are not equivalents, but obviously if I have temporal sequences, you know, you can put them in parallel and you're going to see how, you know, they're both kind of moving along in a similar analogous fashion. Right? One of those, you know, that is kind of immediately, you know, that you might think about reflecting on the parallel to, is the planetary mortal epics. Because, you know, where do the planetary mortal epics end up? The era of light and life. Right? Where does this sequence end up? The era of light and life. Okay? So, the planetary mortal epics are not an equivalent set, right? I mean, it's not, you know, number one of that isn't number one of this and vice versa. I mean, they're not equivalent. But they are bound to be, you know, have some, some similarities that you can recognize. Okay? So, in that mode, you know, you're thinking, well, how does that whole planetary mortal epics thing start? It's, you know, we'll get to that paper here in a little bit, but for those who know the book, you can, you know, kind of reflect on this. Like, okay, well, it starts with the pre-planetary prince times. It starts with primitive man. Oh, yeah, that's what they're talking about here, primitive man. Oh, okay, so it is kind of starting in that same ballpark of, you know, before you have the planetary prince, you know, especially if you're just talking about pre-human, right? And then at the very beginning, you know, even on a normal world without Andonites, right, you've got that initial stage where it's the nutrition epic. And the planetary prince is going to come, you know, as that, you know, in that initial state of mankind, where the predominant thing, you know, is, well, what about my belly? And it's growling. Right? It's a very insistent demand that every animal has to deal with right up front. Not surprising, it's first. So you start with the nutrition epic. Hunger. You start with hunger. Yep.
The fact that there is so much hunger on the planet now, and we're supposed to be into the third epoch, is this a further indication of the the collapse of civilization.
Okay, so the spirit of what we're at is, it has to be more than just there are hungry people. Okay, and there's lots and lots of hungry people on the planet right now. But you need to ask yourself, okay, you take a particular people. Does it match what they're just saying here? Where the chief concern is food problems with those people. It's not just that they're hungry. You know, there really isn't anything more significant to their societal expression than that. I mean, everything kind of just revolves around that very basic element, okay? And it means, like they're saying, they're going to, they're going to spend their waking hours either seeking food or fighting. Okay, so if there's nothing besides those two, then that would be a people that are in that nutrition epic. Okay, so it's not just that they're hungry. Okay. There's a lot of hungry people in the United States, and, you know, the main thing they're thinking about is what's on TV tonight, which is, you know, one of the reasons they might be hungry a lot.
Yeah.
Right?
No, they bring their chips to the
table. Right, there's, anyway. But, okay, so obviously this kind of, lines up with the pre-planetary prince times. Now, another sequence that, obviously we're talking about, if not the whole planet, at least kind of you're following the leading edge of mankind, as it starts in the nutrition epic and ends up in the era of light and life, you're definitely thinking collectively as we go through the sequence. But there's an individual sequence of your development that you shouldn't be surprised that you might see a lot of similarities when you look at a developmental sequence for the group. Right? What's that main developmental sequence that we talk about so much? The levels of meaning. Right? So, if you are, you start out with just that mechanical level. So you're just standing on the mechanical level. To keep that machine going, it's got to be fed. Okay. And, as you're standing there on that mechanical level, the zeroth level of meaning, right, either you can think of it, you are looking up, sort of your immediate goal is what the first level of meaning, the level of the flesh, is sort of fostering. Or depending on how you want to play the analogy, maybe you can think your feet are on the zeroth level, but your eyes are at first level. Okay? So that's kind of what is immediately in the forefront of your consciousness. So you can see how that reminds you of this, right? Nutrition, the nutrition epic, that basic issue of the level of the flesh is kind of what's motivating you. What's motivating the society here is the immediate needs of the flesh. And, you have, notice that, it's really, you're really kind of living in the tension between that basic mechanical level that you're sort of standing on and what motivates you at eye level, or what are you striving upward towards on that first level of meaning, the level of the flesh? It's like, well, that's not a big, very big differential. Yeah, it's right. You're kind of just there at the beginning, so it's nothing too profound. Especially the first adjutant is kind of right there with the mechanical mind, and there is hardly any differential at all. Okay, but that's where you're starting. Okay, so and just notice when they said that last sentence, the food quest is paramount in the minds. See, and these levels of meaning are talking about your mindal self, and like I said, we're talking fundamentally about progressing mind. And so you're reminding you that right there in that first block. But we're thinking about it in the context of civilization. And, you know, it's a faint flicker, indeed, but it is the beginnings of civilization, because there's got to be something there, because the planetary prince, you know, shows up, you know, very shortly after you get to the dawn races of primitive man, right? You know, and he's a civilizational uplifter. So no matter how tenuous, you know, you wouldn't immediately think of calling someone who's a people that are in the nutrition epic civilized, right? But in the sweep of things, there's a truth to them. You know, they're at the very beginnings of civilization, because we're not just talking about an animal phenomenon. We're talking about a human phenomenon, no matter how rudimentary. Okay? All right, so what's next?
Two, the security age. Just as soon as the primitive hunter can spare any time from the search for food, he turns his leisure to augmenting his security. More and more attention is devoted to the technique of war. Homes are fortified and the clans are solidified by mutual fear and by inculcation of hate for foreign groups. Self-preservation is a pursuit which always follows self-maintenance.
So, yeah, very, like we said, very rudimentary self-maintenance in the nutrition epic. Right? And we're trying to build upon that a little bit with some basic self-preservation issues. You know, and you notice you've got the pair here. You have hunger, and here is fear. Right? That rudimentary pair that can motivate us, fear and hunger. So the very basic biologic you has this foundation. And when we think about these other sequences, you know, so this security age, you know, that if you're talking pre-planetary prince for number one, you know, this is post-planetary prince. And so, you know, the very first thing that the planetary prince and his staff are doing when they come to a world is trying to foster this evolution from the nutrition epic to the security age. So think about what positive signs they're looking for, you know, and trying to foster. They're looking for more and more attention being devoted to the technique of war. And when they see that, it's like, all right, we're making progress. This is fantastic. Okay, so you probably have some concepts of ideals in your head. If you were given the job of being one of the corporeal members of a prince's staff, could you patiently delight in this first significant step where your efforts have gotten war going in a much more definitive way, and that's what you're looking for? Uh-huh. Or would you be overly idealistic?
I'm glad it's not my job.
But it might be one day, you never know.
They were fighting already.
Right,
this is just an organized fashion.
Right, see, right, and Gene just brought in the important point. See, they were fighting already. You're trying to bring some order into the chaos. It's a step forward, right? Just, you know, animal-like fighting, right? To go to quote-unquote war is a step forward, you know, from just gibbons, you know, and other great apes pounding on each other sort of stuff, right? You're bringing structure, you know, and, you know, well, you know, when you get up into the civilization papers, you know, they talk a lot about how important war is to the process of moving things along, okay? But just remember, the big point is to think about what your job would be as a corporeal staff member. Step one is, here we are, you know, in this immediate post-planetary prince age, kind of working, you know, trying to get from the nutrition epic to the security age, and that's your first job. You know, and look at the other things that are an affront to your spiritual consciousness, okay? Maybe you can go with the homes being fortified, but then to have the clans being solidified by mutual fear and the inculcation of hate for foreign groups? Like, all right, we really have some good solid hate for foreign groups going. And everyone's high-fiving, you know, on the planetary staff. Right? Can you think in evolutionary terms? Or are you stuck in delusions of existential? Right? I mean, and are you yearning for some fiat implementation of Havona? Right? Can you patiently, right? I mean, think about how patient things are back here. You know, we're hundreds of thousands of years. You know, all you've got to show for your efforts is finally we're getting, you know, everyone really into war and hating foreign groups. Right? After 300,000 years of patient effort, right? Can you think in those terms? But, you know, okay, that's what we're talking about. Obviously, you know, and you came from, you know, the local system headquarters, right, with this job. You've seen some pretty cool, idyllic stuff. Right? And now you're back down in the depths of the trenches, and we're going to see if you actually are patient or if you've just given lip service to it in your classes on the Mansion Worlds. Are you really patient? Let's see. Let's pull out your adjuster, and let's put you face down in the mud for 100,000 years and see how patient you are.
Some
Yeah, you better have someone who's helping you to keep a long-term view, to not get caught up, you know, in the inadequacies of the moment. Right?
I was thinking we're kind of in this problem of the security age with the immigration and refugee problem. We're not very secure right now. We need walls. That's one thing I agree with Donald Trump on. I would put a wall around the whole country, but we don't have that. So it's a big problem.
Right, and you see things like, you know, you start thinking about, oh yeah, and one of the first things that you need for a planetary headquarters is walls,
yeah.
Right? Because, you know, you have this very direct illustration example of how to establish some security.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we all know Adam and Eve. You know, first thing they do is build a nice big wall, right?
But we don't really have that.
Right, and right, so we've got, you know, you've got all of these lessons that, you know, that you can pull out of this. Okay, well, with the levels of meaning, you know, think about how you're stepping up here in a similar fashion. So this would be, your feet are really now planted on the level of the flesh, and you're looking up to, or, you know, at eye level, is the level of feelings. You know, that's what's motivating you. Like, you know, you'll have feelings of insecurity. Oh, yeah, I see. Right, see, those are very profound. You've got these feelings of insecurity for the first time because you've taken care of the belly so you can actually stand now on the level of the flesh, right, until you've taken care of, you know, the hunger thing, that's, you know, you can't stand on that level, right? You fall right down through it, back down to the zeroth level of meaning. You got to get that solid enough for you to be able to stand on the first level of meaning. And then, oh, I've got some new higher thing to reach toward now, feelings. Yeah, but, you know, your first feelings are pretty rudimentary, feelings of insecurity. Okay. But it's getting things going. All right. See, so that's, you can see how it's very easy to, you know, to see parallel. But again, you know, don't literally think of, you know, number one here is the zeroth level, meaning number two is the first level. No, it's not simplistic like that. But they're two sequences from beginning to end, so they've got to match up in certain ways. Right? Just inescapable.
Don't they bleed into one another? I mean,
right. You just see how there's this crosstalk, you know, between, there's this mutual recognition that you can have. You can understand all three of them better when you think about them together like this. Right? But, you know, you think about those planetary mortal epics, you know, like that has a lot to do with those missions of the higher suns as they referred to in the first paragraph. And they said that the planetary prince's work is quite independent of those missions. So that's just, you know, reminding you. I mean, they aren't literally the same two sequences, planetary mortal epics and this and these developmental epics. But they're obviously, you know, have an interplay. There's an interplay between them. All right, so what if we kind of deal with those very rudimentary issues of fear and hunger, or, you know, in order, hunger and fear? Then what?
Three, the material comfort era. After food problems have been partially solved and some degree of security has been attained, the additional leisure is utilized to promote personal comfort. Luxury vies with necessity in occupying the center of the stage of human activities. Such an age is all too often characterized by tyranny, intolerance, gluttony, and drunkenness. The weaker elements of the races incline towards excesses and brutality. Gradually, these pleasure-seeking weaklings are subjugated by the more strong and truth-loving elements of the advancing civilization.
Okay, this is the key. Of all the things that you can read here, this one you want to turn your spiritual eyes away from most definitively. And that's the worst thing that you can do, because this is the key moment. Hundreds of thousands of years might have, you know, passed by, and this is what everyone has been waiting for, high and low. You know, eyes on Uversa have been waiting for this. This is the beginning of really potentializing the system, when you get to tyranny, intolerance, gluttony, and drunkenness.
Wow.
The material comfort era. When you begin to go beyond just being motivated by necessity, you know, I can't do much if I'm killed by the hordes, right? And or if I starve to death, okay? And notice you don't have to totally solve those problems. All after food problems have been partially solved, and some degree of security has been attained. Well, that's telling you that you are designed to be very aggressively wanting to move beyond those rudimentary biologic levels. You know, you're just looking for the first opportunity to liberate yourself from that bondage. You're programmed that way as a human. Right? The animal doesn't have any tendency to move out of that. They just go around and around and around on that. And that's their whole life. So I was saying, the moment that you begin to see the material comfort era dawn, okay, now we're starting to move into something that's more tangibly human. Something that begins to leave some of the animal issues behind. Fundamentally, why this is really sort of the most important point in the whole span of history, is because now you have a differential within which you can choose. That should remind you of something towards the beginning of the book. That differential. What do we call that sequence of bullet points? They have an italicized word that they precede that sequence of bullet points. Up in paper three, the inevitabilities. Right? This is huge because for the first time, the differential that is the inevitabilities is in play. And this is the key. Without that differential, you'll never get anything. Right? Let's just reflect on one of those. You know, in the single column, it's on page 51. It's paper 3, section 5. If you want to just, you know, remind yourself, you can go back and study it some and reflect on it in this mode. But just, you know, let me point out one that's sort of very easily contemplatable in this context. Number eight in that list. Is unselfishness, the spirit of self-forgetfulness, desirable? Right? So think about this, right? See, you know, when you go tyranny, intolerance, gluttony, drunkenness, sounds all pretty selfish and self-centered to me. Is unselfishness, the spirit of self-forgetfulness, desirable? Then must mortal man live face to face with the incessant clamoring of an inescapable self for recognition and honor. Man could not dynamically choose the divine life if there were no self-life to forsake. Man could never lay saving hold on righteousness if there were no potential evil to exalt and differentiate the good by contrast. This is the moment the whole universe has been waiting for, the material comforter, when there's a potential is finally in play. Because only humans can choose, okay, between good and evil, righteousness and unrighteousness, etc. This is where it can potentially get going. And this is fundamentally where mankind is on our world right now. We've finally gotten to the beginning of something potentially significantly human. It only exists in the contrast of the material comfort era. There's probably a word that's maybe burning in your mind that you don't see immediately in that list. Greed. What are you saying? Well, what about greed? Yeah, I mean, greed is very much a part of the material comfort era too. If you reflect on it, greed is just another form of gluttony. Yeah. It's really the same word. Yeah. Yeah. Right? It's material gluttony.
Excess.
Greed. Right? Right, so... we're talking about greed, tyranny. These are the signs of the times. And when you see those signs, you should be very excited at the potential for both you as an individual and for the world as a whole. Because we finally have the liberty potential to choose to be definitively human. We're not beset by fear and hunger to the point where there's just no opportunity to be human. It takes all day long from the moment you wake up until the moment you drop of exhaustion to handle the fear and hunger issue. There's no time to be human. Right? But obviously we all know how much your spiritual consciousness in and of itself does not feel anything positive about greed, for instance, or gluttony, or tyranny, or intolerance. So, what would happen if you took a very spiritually conscious being? And I think he's so spiritually conscious that his body actually has spirit energy in it. Right? Unlike your body. He's very spiritually conscious. Very potentially idealistic. And you make him the ruler of a world. Right? And his staff follows him blindly without question. Because they know he's a brilliant being of light. Right? And he feels this tension. How many hundreds of thousands of years do I have to foster greed, gluttony, tyranny? Can't we just skip all that crap? Can't we just jump right to the age of spiritual striving that I yearn for as a very spiritually conscious person? Right. This is what caused the rebellion. The contrast between the material comfort era and the age of spiritual striving. In a mind that wasn't cosmic in quality, it was just biased too much to the spiritual. Right? this is, so that same, you know, this is the great testing of the will creatures of a planet when they get to the material comfort era. And it's not only the great testing for the will creatures, you know, the mortal will creatures, it's the great testing for the prince and his staff. And the Adam and Eve, you know, and all their children. This is the great test. You now have two things, rather than just one thing in front of you, fear, you know, the one thing fear, the one thing hunger. Right? You've got a contrast. You've got to choose for the first time. You've got to, you actually have to use, you can't just respond to the environment because there's two things, right? Two options. This is the great test. And our planetary prince and a lot of his staff failed the test. They couldn't handle the tension between the material comfort era and the age of spiritual striving. They yearned too blindly for it. You know, they said, why can't we just, you know, skip all this, you know, endless fall of the role? Let's just declare brotherhood. Like, you notice one of the things in between there and spiritual striving is they mentioned brotherhood there. See in number five? Remember how Lucifer, you know, just declared a brotherhood? Right? A brotherhood didn't evolve. He thought they could just declare it by fiat. Aren't we all kindred spirits? You know, let's just declare brotherhood. You know, let's just declare knowledge and wisdom. Our minds are innately divine. Yes. You know, so you think that you aren't really skipping per se. He's like, okay, we've gotten the material comfort area, and we've got, you know, the next two. Yep, we can just go right to the age of spiritual striving.
Is it all important that it unfold a certain way? Because I think that it's because it would lose the sincerity and genuineness.
Yeah.
Genuineness if it didn't, and it has to be genuine.
Right, and fundamentally, see what makes it genuine. Like you're saying, is that it's in synchrony with the evolutionary deity, with the supreme. You know if it's genuine, it'll be upheld. Right, well, if it's not like the upholder, it won't be upheld. Right? The only thing that's genuine, the only thing that's real, the only thing that's upheld is that which conforms to that evolutionary deity. You can't just pretend that the evolutionary deity doesn't exist and just try to fiat things. They aren't real. They might appear to be for a short period of time, but they aren't. It's just an appearance. It's not reality, because the reality that we're in is evolutionary, not existential. Right? So, this is the great testing point. Yeah, and an individual goes through the same process. Remember how they talked about how everyone was on pins and needles when Jesus was going through this stage? Like, is he going to take the wrong fork in the road? It's like, well, he's Jesus. No, he could. He has free will. Right? Yeah, we know he didn't. He chose well, but he could have chose ill rather than well. This is the great testing point. Yep.
I didn't think the planetary prince had good intentions ever. I thought they were rebelling against the universe government and delighted in the misery they caused.
No, why do humans tend to think that way about the quote unquote devil? You know, that he never had, you know, any positive. That's what humans have always thought, and it's 180 degrees false.
But quickly, right? They turn to just rebelling against Michael and
sure
anyone above him.
But how did it start?
Well, maybe
sincerely.
It didn't start with sin. Right.
It is hard to believe.
It started with what they thought was for the greater good. Right? It started with their circumscribed spiritual consciousness. It's so important to get, you know, to you know, there is no conventional wisdom, quote unquote, you know, along this in human history. You know, nothing in human history would lead you to really recognize this, that it's not what you think. No amount of material consciousness is a problem. Right? I mean, tyranny, intolerance, gluttony, and drunkenness aren't evil. They're the Father's way. Every world goes through that. The early efforts of a planetary prince and his staff are to get tyranny, intolerance, gluttony, and drunkenness manifest.
But skipping over like they did created more of them.
Yes. Right? The moment that you skip a step. Well, remember, I mean, it
was
held. With Caligastia, remember we read that, you know, malice aforethought? Yeah, we read that last time,
yeah.
Right? Is that where you were going to bring up?
Yeah. Exactly what I just wanted to bring
right.
up.
I mean, so, I mean, but you got to remember that, you know, Lucifer is at the lead of all this, not Caligastia, right? And so, you know, Lucifer did not start out with malice aforethought.
Yeah,
right? He started out with misguided idealism and a desire for the age of spiritual striving to be now, not way down the road somewhere. What do we want? Spiritual striving. When do we want it? Now. Okay, that's what Lucifer was chanting. He started innocent. You know, but blind, and went down the path, and eventually, you know, it went from evil to sin, and you know, and then he starts getting other people to join in on him. You know, when he's actually in the mode where he's consciously choosing that which he knows to be wrong, to be bad. Right, and Caligastia, you know, joins in with him, down the road like that. You know, so they have it all set up. It's like, okay, when I, you know, raise the flag, all of you guys on your planets, you know, you raise the flag too. Okay. So they had it all planned in advance. But it's very important to understand that it didn't start with, no one woke up one morning and said, you know what would be really cool is to be as evil as I can think of? That caricature, you know, is false.
He said starting with Lucifer, but when it got down to Caligastia, he was joining in evil.
Right, he was joining in. Lucifer was very silver tongued, and he got Caligastia flipped around, you know, and said, you know, okay, yeah, we can all recognize that this is bad, but don't look at that, you know. Look at this bigger picture that we've created in our imaginations, and see how it's really good. Right. So, it's like don't mind the man behind the curtain, sort of a thing, right? That he did with him. But if you get nothing else from this section, you've got to get that. You've got to break from the forever belief that. The problem on any world or in any individual is they're just too prosaic. They're just too materially pragmatic or whatever. Or even that they're just too selfish. They're just too greedy or whatever. No, I mean, that isn't a fundamental fault.
How many billions do you need?
Right? God starts out every child on the first level of meaning, the level of selfishness. That's the Father's way. Anything else would be wrong. And to not let that child work through that where God started him in the level of selfishness and work up from there, discover the tensions that trying to make that a complete lifestyle solution produce, they're never going to develop that. It's important, the inevitabilities. You can't get those positive things you desire except through that means. It's the only way. So it doesn't matter if Lucifer, Caligastia, and crew tried to short-circuit this process, go right to the age of spiritual striving, or we do it. Right? There's an emergency on this planet, a civilizational emergency, because almost every spiritually conscious person on the planet thinks that the material comforter is innately evil. Now, and exists in a dichotomy with the age of spiritual striving on the other side of the line. It's like, no. You know, it's where we are and where we're supposed to be. You know, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that humans have never even thought about in between that and the age of spiritual striving, too. And you can't get to the number four here unless you go all the way through number three. Okay. Now, what about... Oh, is there...
It's related to what you're saying.
Okay.
Kermit's asking, are you saying that the material comfort era was in its initial stages when the rebellion broke out on the ranch?
What I'm saying is that, basically you've got a group of individuals, impatient individuals, who, you know, they start out in the security age, and they know the normal sequence, but remember, Lucifer has convinced them all, Caligash and the other planetary princes, he's convinced them that this is sort of the foreign potentate tyranny of forcing every world to slog through this sequence. And they're going, anyone can see that you could just skip over all that, that's not essential, and then it's all just, they love to hold us back. We yearn to be free. That's why Satan called Lucifer the god of liberty, right? Liberty from bondage to this sequence. Screw the sequence, they're saying. Jump to the end. Yeah, and then, think about these parallels we talked about, right? So, with the planetary mortal epochs. So, the material comfort era would be then, if we're following this, there's got to be some similarity to the post-Adamic age. Adam and Eve are biologic uplifters. That sounds pretty material. They foster not only all those material issues with the genetics, but science, right? Which allows you to achieve material comfort. Right? Is that technology that they foster? Right, so you can see how there's an obvious similarity to what an Adam and Eve are up to. Trying to foster, getting the material comfort era, progressing along. And what about the levels of meaning? Okay, so now we would be, we've been motivated by feelings and we've kind of really got that in place. Now we can kind of stand on our feelings. Stand on the level of the feelings, the second level of meaning. And see, and now you can see this is where this great twofold, is in play, this great choice. Do you just lay there in feelings forever? Because once you finally get up to feelings, it's feelings, nothing more than feelings, right? Right? That can, that starts to feel like a complete lifestyle solution, an eternal state. Right? So are you just going to wallow there in the feelings forever, which is going to lead to all of this, introspective, turned back on itself stuff of tyranny, intolerance, gluttony, drunkenness, greed, right? Right? Where the second level of meaning, the level of feelings, becomes an end in itself? Are you just going to be stuck in the lower domain of the hourglass forever? Or are you going to notice that what appears to just be a go-nowhere point above you is actually an opening? Are you going to actually stand up instead of laying there in the level of feelings? Are you going to stand on the level of feelings and get your eyes up to the third level of meaning and see something new, an incredible new potential See, the more strong and truth-loving elements. Right? Because the moment you can get up there, there's going to be recognition. It opens up into the domain of truth above. I choose to go up, not to delay forever in bliss and the feelings. Right? Or, you know, just self-destruct in the feelings.
But get ready, because one of those inevitabilities, if you do, is going to be truth.
Right, the tension.
Are you willing to follow it wherever?
Ever it leads, yes.
Wherever.
Wherever, yes.
And don't find the other thing.
Yes. Right. You know this is going to take courage, because the more you go up, you know, the more prickly the tensions can get. Right, but see that's, and see, you see how they say that. They point out how it, mankind bifurcates at this point. Before, they were all one. We were one people in the nutrition epoch. We're one people in the security age. But you get to the material comfort era, and it bifurcates into two. There are gradually these pleasure-seeking weaklings. You know, so like, let's say you'd like to just spend your whole life blissing in the joy of spiritual experience.
Don't choose to follow this path right here in this room.
Right. But just, you know, notice how they just described you there, right? You're a timid soul. I'm, you know, sad to record. You know, you're a pleasure-seeking weakling in the eyes of the universe. Pretty poignant. You know, let me just go off by myself and just, you know, try to maintain just lay on my back and float in the level of the feelings for the rest of my life. It's like, no, are you going to be strong, truth-loving?
We've gone from a chicken in every pot to a pot on every corner. One shop on every corner.
But you know, can you bring your spiritual consciousness into balance? See, you know, this is the point where your spiritual consciousness starts creating a list. Well, that's imperfect, and that's imperfect, and that's unfortunate, and that could be better, and da 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 da. Right? Or do you look up? See, just think about you're only looking in the plane, right? You're not a true seeker. You're an error and evil detector. Right? You need to look up. This is your test. Will your eyes turn up, or will you lose yourself and your relationship to eternity in the level of the feelings? Die in subjectivity. Right? Be a drop of water in the ocean. Right? That's the subjective domain. Or are you going to go up across the threshold and begin to establish yourself courageously and independently as an objective element in the cosmos? Right? This is the test. Right? So, you know, will you have your eyes up there and be motivated by what's in that third level of meaning as you're standing here on the second level? Like just patience, for instance, see, is what would be at eye level. Oh, that was the big thing with Lucifer and crew. They weren't patient, see? They weren't keeping their head above the water. They weren't keeping their eyes up there where patience is at eye level. Or they weren't, you know, or however you want, like I said, however you want to think about it. Or they weren't striving up towards that goal of being patient, to go up from the second level where you're standing to the third, reaching up to it and do a chin up so that you can stand on it next, right? Okay. All right, so that's challenge yourself to not see the era that you live in as a negative actuality. See it as the great positive potentiality that hundreds of thousands of years we're leading to. The choice is at hand.
And that's why we have this. And I think that's, we know that up above, up in the upper domain, we've got, it's going to take courage, independent thinking, all of this transcendence. But
we know what's happening to civilization too, and that, and so we need the patience even more.
Yeah.
We need to transcend even more, but we don't want to stick our heads in the sand either.
No, I mean, but just, you know, just notice that, you know, this is the whole point. I mean, yes, there's an emergency. Civilization's in jeopardy. But you got to know why, right? The problem is not that we don't have enough spiritual consciousness on the planet.
No.
That's not the problem, right? We don't need more religion. We need something above that. Right, we need those who are looking up from, you know, Jesus. You know, where did Jesus say he found us? Right, on the second level of meaning, and I would lead you up. Right, right. This is where we are. Remember, you know, he's not really a genuine bestowal son, you know, subsequent to a magisterial son. We're technically still in the post-Adamic era. Oh, wait a minute. Yeah, we were saying that's kind of parallel to number three here, the material comfort era. Right. See, that's where we are.
Yeah.
We're fundamentally in the post-Adamic, you know, like era here.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the first challenges is not to have overmuch sympathy for the weaklings.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, because that, instead of looking up, that brings your gaze down, right? You know.
Yeah. Don't go down with them, you know, to be sympathetic to them. You know, and you wouldn't want to, you know, make anyone feel uncomfortable that there's a differential. No, you courageously go up, and there are some of them that will find the courage within them to follow you up. Even if they can't take a hold of their bootstraps themselves, you could lead, right? Show them the way up. Don't pull yourself down to their level, which is what we're doing, you know? It's like, you know, again, it's like, why would you want to do that? Well, your unity consciousness, you know, has that notion of equality, right? You see all these people in these lower states, and it's like, well, we need to go down to them so we're all equal. You know, we weren't really up. We were just delusional. Oh, my gosh, I feel so guilty that I was pretending that I was above them. I need to recognize that we really all are all one people, right? Down there below. No, you take the path that's not very well traveled right now, right? Yeah, there's these two options now. Okay, let's keep going.
Four, the quest for knowledge and wisdom. Food, security, pleasure, and leisure provide the foundation for the development of culture and the spread of knowledge. The effort to execute knowledge results in wisdom, and when a culture has learned how to profit and improve by experience, civilization has really arrived. Food, security, and material comfort still dominate society, but many forward-looking individuals are hungering for knowledge and thirsting for wisdom. Every child is provided an opportunity to learn by doing. Education is the watchword of these ages.
Okay, so here we notice, you know, the thing that strikes you right up front is it's not an epic, an era, or age, or an era. It's a quote-unquote quest. It seems to be a transition, a threshold. Right. I mean, you know, as we're seeing how it, you know, there's this analogous, you know, to the sequence of the levels of meaning, you know, what would this be like? It's like standing on the third level of meaning, standing in the neck of the hourglass, right? Quivering on the very brink there, right? You know, and now being motivated up towards the fourth level of meaning. Right? So you see, food, security, pleasure, and leisure provide the foundation. See, you're standing on that. Right? And now you can think about higher things. And so you can see how obviously just the use of the words epic, age, era, and then quest, like lower domain, neck, and then there's going to be another one for the, you know, parallel to the upper domain, another epic, age, era sequence. Now, again, then think about it, that level of wisdom, the third level of meaning. And see, so you know, and you're starting to profit. How to profit and improve by experience, you know, wisdom. You know, think about the planetary mortal epics. Right? The magisterial sun comes as the intellectual uplifter. Right? To get that beginnings of, you know, quality thinking going on, of knowledge and, you know, the beginnings of wisdom. Start to really get the seventh adjutant playing, people following that philosophic impulse. You know, so it's going to begin with mere wisdom, you might say, and it's going to build into more full-throated philosophy. You can see the next period that, you know, they've got here, you know, where they use the word philosophy. Okay, so you can see how you immediately can recognize, again, the parallels to the planetary mortal epics and the levels of meaning. You know, the hourglass, you know, practically starts to jump off the page now when you notice how the words, you know, are mapping it. Three levels below, a level in the middle, and three levels above. All right. Let's see. Anything else we want to bring out there? Let's see. Just notice how they word that. The effort to execute knowledge results in wisdom. And it works that way. You know, you start to respond to that scientific impulse of the fourth adjutant in a very collective way, right? And, you know, you want to really act upon, you know, this knowledge that you're developing, and, you know, and that's going to lead you up. That's going to result in wisdom. One must do something as well as be something. It's not, the point is not just to accumulate knowledge, but to execute knowledge, to act upon it, you know, and find out the blind spots in your knowledge, get a little tribulation as a result, which, you know, is essential to get wisdom. You got to have the courage to try to execute that knowledge. It's like, well, what if it's not all there? That's what courage is for. Go forward. If you fall, pick yourself up. You just acquired some wisdom. You're going to profit and improve, right? You're going to do better next time. You can improve by experience. See, and civilization has really arrived. Right? This whole bit about how there's a civilizational emergency, or you could say there's a philosophic emergency, I mean, they're really saying the same thing. Right? Once you really get the beginnings of philosophy, wisdom, responding to that spirit of wisdom, the philosophic impulse, okay, now civilization has really arrived. You're functioning in, you know, as a full human now. If you top out with the sixth adjutant, right, you're not fully human, and there's no way for civilization to be very definitive. No amount of religious impulse is going to give a solid civilization.
You would tend to become fanatical if you top out there.
Right. Right. Exactly. You know, you're just going to have zeal, and we all know that if that is tried to treat it as an end in itself, it becomes a destructive force. Right? It's because there's nothing to temper it. You know, you need the objectivity of wisdom, of philosophy, or the good of religion is taken to an extreme and becomes bad. Right? Just like everything, the good can be taken to an extreme and becomes bad.
Just seems to me that the issue of the obvious emergency that we're in is exacerbated by the fact that the gene pool is being so diluted, mm-hmm. and the quality of the culture is
right. Poor. Yeah, I mean, so and you can see how, you know, as we were talking about the planetary mortal epics, right? We didn't get the full Adamic uplift like we, you know, we recognize as kind of essential to precede this quest for knowledge and wisdom. After all, who comes, you know, as those biologic uplifters? Remember, this is a sequence of progressing mind. They're fundamentally getting you so that you can utilize the seventh adjutant more, the philosophic impulse. That's what the Adamic blood is fundamentally doing, right? So that you, when you're, you know, in number three there, you're standing on the level of the feelings, and you want to be able to see the third level of meaning. It's like, well, if you don't have eyes to see wisdom, because you haven't gotten fully biologically uplifted, right? Yeah, which of the two paths are you going to pick? Right, that are in play there. Right? How about if we just bliss out, right, in feelings? Right, so you can see how it all fits. If you don't have the potential for wisdom, you can't get into the quest for knowledge and wisdom. And notice how we started with hungers, and we've gone to higher hungers, hungering for knowledge and thirsting for wisdom. Oh, wait a minute. They actually purposely gave you a parallel, right? In the material comfort era, you had gluttony and drunkenness, food and drink, right? Is that purely negative, or is it potentially positive if you so choose? Yeah, you can turn gluttony and drunkenness into hungering for knowledge and thirsting for wisdom. Once you bring in something besides matter, once you can see something besides matter. Otherwise, that your ability to hunger for knowledge and thirst for wisdom will get misdirected into hungering for matter and thirsting for matter. It's your choice. I mean, the urge is there to hunger and thirst. It's what you do with it. And that's in your hands. You won't naturally hunger for knowledge and thirst for wisdom. You'll naturally be gluttonous and drunken. Right? It's artificial to hunger for knowledge and thirst for wisdom. It's, right? The basic urges are natural, but what they're directed to is in your choice hands. You have to choose. Don't just let them naturally direct themselves. Right? All right, see, so that was very purposeful. You see why they wanted you to notice that parallel there. Instead of just being greedy for material things, be greedy for knowledge. Turn that into a positive. Okay, so you have a quest for a whole new sequence, and you achieve that. So we begin the sequence again of epic age era. What do we got?
Well,
before we go on,
every child is provided an opportunity to learn by doing.
Right.
That's,
you know, and again, to execute knowledge. See, one must do something as well as be something. Right, that's what they're getting at. You're trying to really strike step with the cosmos here. You're starting to move beyond what God the Father made you, right? And beginning to identify with the other parent. So you see how you started the first half before the quest was kind of father side, and on the other side of the quest is the mother side. Right? There's two sides because there's two parents. Father's the initiator. Right? So again, if you think you only have one parent, if you fixate on God the Father, can you actually get to the age of spiritual striving? No. See how we've got all of these things where we didn't want to prevent ourselves from getting to the age of spiritual striving, but you will unwittingly. If you don't recognize you have another parent, and that parent's different, right? You know, it's not just like God the Father, only a different sex. No, very different, that other parent. It requires a whole different skill set to come into relationship with that other parent. It's very different consecrating the will and consecrating the mind. Right? You know, and see, when you really begin to consecrate the mind, civilization has really arrived. See? When you begin to bring in the other parent. Right? Why have we been languishing, you know, in the wake of what Michael did 2,000 years ago? Because we've got to bring in the other parent. All right, so all right, so if we've kind of gotten our eyes up to wisdom. Now we want to pull up and really stand upon that. What happens now?
Five, the epic of philosophy and brotherhood. When mortals learn to think and begin to profit by experience, they become philosophical.
Another way to say that.
They start out to reason within themselves and to exercise discriminative judgment. The society of this age becomes ethical, and the mortals of such an era are truly becoming moral beings. Wise moral beings are capable of establishing human brotherhood on such a progressing world. Ethical and moral beings can learn how to live in accordance with the golden rule.
Right, so you can immediately see how a normal bestowal son, is synchronized with the stuff they're talking about here. Comes to bring peace to the world. He's the Prince of Peace. The brotherhood of mankind, right? So you can see how this ties up with that planetary mortal epic. And again, in terms of the levels of meaning, we're now standing on the third, like they said, when mortals learn to think and begin to profit by experience. So you're starting to actually stand on the third level of meaning, and start to look towards higher things. Or am I getting that mixed up? Hold on a second. We've got, we were standing on the, third there. Okay, no, we're standing on the fourth now. Excuse me. Okay. I was saying the wrong words. Okay. So when you're actually standing on the fourth, and before with the quest for knowledge and wisdom, we were standing on the third. It's tricky with these numbers. You got to keep them straight in your head. Okay, so you're standing on the third and starting to be motivated by the objective things. Okay, now we are with number five here. We're standing on the fourth and starting to be motivated by the fifth level of meaning. Okay, I got it square now. Sorry about that. Okay, and how do I know I'm starting to be motivated by the fifth level of meaning? That's the moral level. Right? So sorry about that. I hope I didn't confuse people too much there. The mortals of such an era are truly becoming moral beings. Okay. And in terms of the level you're standing on, I'm having a hard time keeping it straight. So you're standing on the fourth level of meaning. Okay, when you think about, notice how they mentioned the golden rule, and you're reminded of that illustrating the golden rule up the levels of meaning up there in part four. What do they call the fourth level of meaning in that illustration? The level of brotherly love. Right? So here's the epic of philosophy and brotherhood. Right? See how that fits in with the level of brotherly love. And like we said before, you're getting kindred minds. Right? That's fundamentally philosophy. Another thing about when they say philosophy and brotherhood, just to note, what does philosophy literally mean? Loving wisdom. In the previous one you had wisdom, and now you have loving wisdom. Okay, yeah, that thirsting for wisdom, like they said in the previous one. Okay, so, if you know the Greek, philosophia, okay, so the philos is loving, and sophia is wisdom. And the philia, P-H-I-L, okay, if you take, the noun there, the philia, that's love, obviously, then. What kind of love is PH, philia, in Greek? That's brotherly love. In contrast to agape, which is fatherly love. Okay? See, so again, you see why those would pair together so naturally, just in terms of the language, philosophy and brotherhood. And so you're that's what you're standing on. Is that that logical level? Logic is tied to philosophy. Standing on that level of brotherly love, so you have the brotherhood. But your eyes, or your upward motivation is towards the moral level.
So you're into the, three cosmic.
Right, you're standing on the first cosmic intuition, you're starting to be motivated by the second cosmic intuition. Up there in the upper domain in terms of thinking about the levels of meaning. And see, again, thinking about how a bestowal son has a lot to do with that sort of stage in the sequence. Okay, so, all right, I think we got it all cleared up. Okay, so now what's next then? Now is that thing that your spiritual consciousness sort of yearns for, and you've worked your way up to be able to do that. Okay, so let's get that one in.
6, the age of spiritual striving. When evolving mortals have passed through the physical, intellectual, and social stages of development, sooner or later they attain those levels of personal insight which impel them to seek for spiritual satisfactions and cosmic understandings. Religion is completing the ascent from the emotional domains of fear and superstition to the high levels of cosmic wisdom and personal spiritual experience. Education aspires to the attainment of meanings, and culture grasps at cosmic relationships and true values. Such evolving mortals are genuinely cultured, truly educated, and exquisitely God-knowing.
Okay, so let me see if I can keep myself straight here. All right. okay, so let's start with the planetary mortal epics. Yeah, you kind of need to draw this out in front of you to keep it straight in your mind. Okay, so now we would be in the Trinity teacher sons. Right? So that, reminding you education aspires to the attainment of meanings, the Trinity teacher sons. They're the Trinity, tied to the cosmos. Notice how you're talking about religion is completing. So, you're starting to really leave science and religion per se behind, and it's all becoming this one new transcendent thing that you can call an ever greater philosophy. A synchrony with the universal harmony, with the cosmos. And in terms of the levels of meaning, okay, so now, I've gotten some relationship to moral discrimination, the second cosmic intuition, like they were describing before. I've actually got myself out, I'm standing on the fifth level of meaning. And now the spiritual level above that is at eye level, or what I'm striving for. And you can see thinking about it in the striving mode is very appropriate here. See, you're literally on the fifth level of meaning, striving to go up to the spiritual level, the sixth level of meaning. It's literally the age of spiritual striving. Right? Okay, so that's in play. And let's see. So you've notice how they say, you've pass through the physical, intellectual, and social stages of development. So all of that individuality and associativity we've been reading about, you're standing on that, and sooner or later they attain those levels of personal insight which impel them to seek for spiritual satisfactions and cosmic understandings. And to begin to complete the threefold up there, to begin to strive to have the threefold, right? And and genuine spiritual, personal insight, your spiritual insight that you are now trying to take delight in cultivating on the sixth level of meaning. But but you aren't really standing there yet, but you're working your way up there, and exquisitely God-knowing at the end there. Remember, you fundamentally have a religious consciousness. You have God-knowingness when you begin to see at the sixth level of meaning. Okay, so that's how that fits in there. All right, so obviously what's next is to actually get up and stand on the sixth level of meaning and do something beyond that. Okay.
Would God knowingness be somewhat having a definitive relationship with your adjuster or not? Or is that to come?
God knowings is not dependent upon the adjuster. If you have an adjuster, the adjuster will catalyze, or strengthen, make all the more tangible your God knowingness. But fundamentally, God knowingness is what you know through the third cosmic intuition, via that insight. You know there's a God. You have insight into that fact. You have genuine religious consciousness. And then anything else, is just going to potentially strengthen that or focalize that. But all you need is the Holy Spirit and personality to have God knowingness, fundamentally.
7, the era of light.
Maybe before you read that, just maybe to help you with a thought you might have. You're going to need the adjuster to get to God consciousness, right?
Yeah.
Right. But just God knowing this, you just need the Holy Spirit and personality.
7, the era of light and life. This is the flowering of the successive ages of physical security, intellectual expansion, social culture, and spiritual achievement. These human accomplishments are now blended, associated, and coordinated in cosmic unity and unselfish service. Within the limitations of finite nature and material endowments, there are no bounds set upon the possibilities of evolutionary attainment by the advancing generations who successively live upon these supernal and settled worlds of time and space.
Okay, so like we said before, the planetary mortal epics, now we're actually using the same expression, the era of light and life. But you go, I'm always talking about the era of light and life, and there's all these statements in the book about it. It's called an era of light and life rather than an age of light and life or an epoch of light and life, because it fits into this sequence. See, of using epoch, age, era. So just, add that to your thoughts, and every time you invoke the era of light and life, it'll remind you that you don't just somehow jump to there, right? There's a developmental sequence that eventually gets you there, and you have to, first do the nutrition epoch, next the security age, then the material comfort era, et cetera, till finally then and only then the era of light and life. Okay, so you and see how here they've got physical, intellectual, social, and spiritual. See, so there, you're standing upon all of that foundation now. Not just like the previous one, physical, intellectual, social, but you've genuinely got the spiritual level. You're thinking about the levels of meaning. In hand, you're standing on that now. So from the levels of meaning sense, you're standing on the sixth level of meaning, the top level. It's like, well, now what? Well, now the fullness of the cosmos is at eye level, is ready for the striving for. And you see that, see? You're going to take all these human accomplishments and blend them, associate and coordinate them in cosmic unity. What's another word for cosmic unity?
Triunity.
Yes. Right? Because as they just said, you have individuality, associativity, and unity now, so you can now have triunity or cosmic unity. You know, and again, you know, we see how initially you're going to, your visions of the era of light and life are going to be very biased to how things appear on this side of the quest for knowledge and wisdom. And very father-like. Right? No. Right? At that point, you're very, very mother-like. Right? Cosmic unity. The Father doesn't have cosmic unity. Right? He's your spiritual father, not your cosmic father. You have a spiritual father and a cosmic mother. Right? The only way to get cosmic unity, tri-unity, is with your other parent. And it's very misdirecting to call him your cosmic father. And that's why the Revelators never call him your cosmic father, because he's not your cosmic father. He's your spiritual father. Jesus tried to pound that home. Right? You have a spiritual father and a cosmic mother. See, within the limitations of finite nature, okay, you know, we're not going to transcend the finite yet here, but and material endowments, there are no bounds, though, right? Because what lies beyond is the fullness of the cosmos. And they're, you know, from our perspective, are seemingly endless cosmic levels. You know, we work up through these levels and we seem to get to the end. It's like, no, now the door is open to just a never-ending sequence of cosmic level after cosmic level after cosmic level after cosmic level after cosmic level, right? Until finally the whole grand universe is settled in light and life.
And you start again.
That's what they're invoking, no bounds set upon the possibilities of evolutionary attainment. Right? And that's why, also, with the planetary mortal epics, it doesn't just end at the era of light and life, that starts a whole new beginning. The whole sequence of first stage light and life, second stage light and life, etc. See, opens up a whole new vista. You know, so that you go, well, we finally got there. No, you got to a new beginning. Right? It starts all over again. A whole new challenge.
Let us begin.
Yes. Like we say so much, I finally got into the core of the mortal finality. Yeah, you finally got to the full beginning. Okay, now we're actually going to do something.
Let's take an oath. So we can start something.
Right. Yeah. Finally, you know, you can start it in earnest now. Yeah. But, you know, okay, so anyway, just, you know, you can see how tricky it is to keep yourself all stepping along. And it's interesting that I ended up tripping up in the neck of the hourglass there, you know, as it were. Why was it that I found myself back a notch? Because we were talking so much about the material comfort era, you know, and so I dropped back, and then I was trying to build on that, you know. It's a tricky thing, that transition. I had difficulty just doing it in class here, right? You know, the point is not to live forever in the neck of the hourglass. You've got to get there, but then you immediately step through it. And so that little trip up that I did actually maybe will help you to remind you about how you've got that transition there. Patience, for instance, isn't an end in itself. You know, it's just the beginning. You immediately get a hold of it and move on to the next thing. As they were saying there, it's not that you instantly leave all of the lesser things behind. I can't remember how they worded it. Oh, here, food security and material comfort still dominate society. You know, number four there, they say. Mm-hmm. But many forward-looking individuals are hungering for knowledge and thirsting for wisdom. Right? They're actually going to stand on that third level of meaning and begin to get this new logical recognition dawn in their mind, and they're going to strive for that. Okay. All right. So So you mean you just can't spend, you know, too much time on this. We'll read the last little bit here, and say, you know, but just before we read that and continue on, you know, this is just a very huge section, very important section, just almost no end to the stuff that you can reflect on how consequential this is. To understanding your developmental sequence up the levels of meaning more, you know, and just noticing things like that, you know, in the number six there, education aspires to the attainment of meanings, right? You can't live a life with meaning until, you know, you've gotten up where you've got philosophy, you know, in hand and are actively building upon it, you know. I mean, there's just no way to get to meaning with science, you know, merely science or merely religion, or even merely the two of them. You know, it's not until you bring them together. All right, so just all the things that you can notice, all the words are very carefully chosen to get you to reflect on these things. All right, what are they saying? Just to wrap it up.
After serving their spheres through successive dispensations of world history and the progressing epochs of planetary progress, the planetary princes are elevated to the position of planetary sovereigns upon the inauguration of the era of light and life.
Okay, so when all is said and done, they bring you back to the planetary prince and remind you that he becomes planetary sovereign once you get to light and life. You know, and you notice that after serving their spheres through successive dispensations. See, they're even kind of giving you a little hint there, like, oh, dispensations, that's like the planetary mortal epics. See, they're wanting you to think about that parallel like we did. And again, you see, and progressing epics of planetary progress. So there they're using epics in the general mode rather than the specific mode. And you saw in number five, you know, did you notice when they said becomes ethical and the mortals of such an era? It's like, well, wait a minute, I thought it was the epic of philosophy and brotherhood. What do you mean such an era? See, you know, there they're using era in just a general sense again. Right? So don't get tripped up by that. But, you know, you can see by that, if nothing else, they're reminding you that don't fixate on, okay, I gotta call this an epic, and I gotta call this an age, you know, or I'm not in conformity with the cosmos. Like I said, it's just a little aid to try to help you to remember which one is what the sequence is. Right? All right. Let's see. So I think we got everything there. Yeah. Okay. So I think we have time to just do this next little section. We'll probably save the section seven for next time. That's kind of a fun one that you guys may remember what happens in that one. An interesting italicized word in that one. but let's, there's kind of a, this is sort of like a little footnote relative to what we just said, this next section.
Section six, planetary culture. The isolation of Urantia renders it impossible to undertake the presentation of many details of the life and environment of your Satania neighbors. In these presentations, we are limited by the planetary quarantine and by the system isolation. We must be guided by these restrictions in all our efforts to enlighten your ancient mortals. But in so far as is permissible, you have been instructed in the progress of an average evolutionary world, and you are able to compare such a world's career with the present state of Urantia.
Okay, you're going, well, wait a minute. I thought they were going to, you know, really kind of talk about planetary culture. It's like, well, maybe they're just giving me a little aside here. You know, you'll see that they kind of continue on, and it's like they don't really, you know, get into planetary culture per se. But notice what they did there. It's something I've tried to get you to notice several times in various places in the book. When they literally point to their mandate and the boundary line that they're up against, you can't say anything about what's over there on the other side of this line. When they want you to really discover what's on the other side of that line, they remind you that there's a line. and they say, closely notice the shape of this line. You know, what kind of a thing on the other side of the line would produce that boundary, right? They do this, you know, they'll literally state it directly when they want you to think in this mode. It's like, okay, so why are they doing it here? They remind you, they just gave you this previous section. They want you to really reflect on that previous section and begin to see all the things that that implies that they didn't speak of directly. They want you to do what we just did. We didn't just read the facts of that section, you know, in 5 minutes and, you know, and we've been doing other stuff for the rest of the night. No, we just spent practically the whole night on that section. And doing what they encouraged us to do right here. Don't be limited by the boundaries that we were limited to. Use reflective thinking and go beyond what we could put down in direct words. Put the pieces together. Synthesize. You know, see, like they said, but insofar as permissible, we have been instructed in the... Yeah, you have been instructed in the progress of average evolutionary world, and you are able to compare. See, such a world's great. Right, they get you. You know, they want encouraging you to reflect and to synthesize what you just read with other parts of the book. So we already did that. You know, to a great degree, to actually go above and beyond, in many ways, the immediacy of what we read, because they told us to really do that even more so than normal right here. Okay? Let's see. But the other thing is, when they say the isolation of Urantia renders it impossible to undertake the presentation of many of the details of the life and environment of your Satania neighbors. And there's all kinds of curious things in play there. You're wondering, it's like, well, they don't often talk about it quite like that, the limitations of the mandate. I don't know exactly well where to go with that. But if nothing else, just remind yourself that you don't have to be limited to the rebellion and the default. You know, they're encouraging you to, you know, to go beyond that. Like we said, you know, toward the beginning, the fact that we don't have, and haven't had for 500,000 years, that planetary prince and his staff being these ongoing civilizational uplifters, you're going to have to do that job yourself. Right? I mean, that fundamentally means you've got to overcome these limitations of the rebellion, even when you're reading this book, that the rebellion has impacted what words are, you know, can be in this book. And your job is to transcend that limitation.
Take
the light in cultivating, having the insight to, that allow you to go beyond... the limit, there's not much to see on this planet. See, without a planetary prince and his staff and an Adam and Eve and all that, so you need insight all the more to go beyond the appearance, the limited appearance that is in the wake of their issues. Okay. So anyway, what else do they say here?
The development of civilization on Urantia has not differed so greatly from that of other worlds which have sustained the misfortune of spiritual isolation. But when compared with the loyal worlds of the universe, your planet seems most confused and greatly retarded in all phases of intellectual progress and spiritual attainment.
That's almost like an archangel is writing this one. little sobering. So some interesting information, though, that we are similar to the other 36 rebellion worlds. Um, uh, Yeah, but then reminding you to have some, to really strike step with some definitive humility here. And notice they didn't just say intellectual progress, but spiritual attainment. And that's probably even more important. Like you hear me stress so much. It's very easy for you to think that you are very spiritual. It will appear that you're very spiritual, but you aren't really, is what they're saying there, right? You are most confused in terms of intellectual progress and greatly retarded in terms of spiritual attainment.
I'm confused about what spiritual attainment is.
Exactly. Right. That's the key thing to recognize. It's because we're confused that spiritual attainment has very limited potential even. Right? Normally the spiritual uplifter comes in the wake of the intellectual uplifter for a reason. Right? So you got to keep that in mind. You need to be extremely humble in regard to this spiritual thing, because if you aren't, you're going to stumble into the same things, you know, that Lucifer and crew did, as we were just talking about. You're going to think you have the insight requisite to skip all those steps and just get right at that spiritual striving thing. You're going to want to start to micromanage the planet, to literalize ideals, in the outer life. And you're not going to get the era of light and life that you're desiring. You're going to get the orgy of darkness and death, just like Lucifer did. Right? And it doesn't matter. It's like, if I don't desire anything negative, then nothing negative will result. No, that's not the way it works. It's like, well, why wouldn't it work that way? Because you got to know that you have very limited vision. Doesn't seem like I have, it doesn't appear, I don't appear to have limited vision. It appears that I see everything clearly.
Right.
But you do, right? It's relative. You see clearly within the tiny little space that you exist in. Well, it doesn't seem like a tiny space, but you got to just know that, right? Despite all appearances of the contrary, right? Okay, so that's, that's what, they're trying to get you to face that by just stating it. It won't appear that you're greatly retarded. A revelation doesn't describe appearances. A revelation describes reality that you can't see. Now, you could develop the insight to know that you're greatly retarded despite the appearances that you aren't. But in lieu of all of us having to get that much insight, they just put it, get that through self-revelation. Sure. Right? Just going to have it directly in the epical revelation. Period. You are greatly retarded. Just start with that. That's the initial assumption that you should begin with. And be very cautious about trying to act upon what appears to be definitive recognition of reality, because it's not. Okay.
Because of your planetary misfortunes, your ancients are prevented from understanding very much about the culture of normal worlds. But you should not envisage the evolutionary worlds, even the most ideal, as spheres whereon life is a flowery bed of ease. The initial life of the mortal races is always attended by struggle. Effort and decision are an essential part of the acquirement of survival values.
See how I already incorporated those statements when we were talking about the material comfort era. Right? That's the truth that's flowing through that. Here they're trying to encourage you to recognize that. Because your spiritual consciousness is immediately going to think, oh, if we just, didn't have the rebellion and the fault, if we were a normal world, it would be a flowery bed of ease. No, effort, struggle, conflict are universal, always attended by struggle. Right? It's the Father's way. Like I said, that list, you know, it's the Father's way that that you potentialize light and life through tyranny, intolerance, gluttony, and drunkenness.
Yeah.
It's the Father's way.
They wouldn't have this book. They would have a very bottom-up struggle.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't have the whole cosmos laid out before them like we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
They would have a very limited view that they're trying to get step by step up.
Right, on those quote-unquote normal worlds. Yeah.
Normal world.
Right. So again, you know, that reminds you of the rewards of isolation, the next section. You know? Mm-hmm. There's a reward, you know, that we get this. Right? We get to think about architects of the master universe. And our local universe is a long ways away from being settled in light and life.
Talking about how much we can even begin to think that we're understanding philosophy, mm-hmm. and have some wisdom or patience or any of it. If you want to think about how well you do with effort, struggle, conflict, faith, you know, all mm-hmm. of that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to come around over and over and over and over with all that affliction until you learn to actually feast on those challenges.
Yeah.
If you think a little bit of the struggle that we've had is tough, just get ready, because you're going to have to learn to go all the way up to appreciation and love.
Mm-hmm.
All of that.
Yeah, and just it's important to notice those, you know, those steps to progress: effort, struggle, conflict, faith, determination, love, loyalty, and progress. You know, remember what we were just reading about progressive civilization. See, those are the steps of progress. So it's not surprising that they mention that here, because we're talking about the developmental sequence. Okay, let's keep going here so we can wrap it up.
Culture presupposes quality of mind. Culture cannot be enhanced unless mind is elevated. Superior intellect will seek a noble culture and find some way to attain such a goal. Inferior minds will spurn the highest culture even when presented to them ready-made. Much depends also upon the successive missions of the divine sons, and upon the extent to which enlightenment is received by the ages of their respective dispensations.
Okay, we talked a lot about the dispensations, but just notice culture presupposes quality of mind. And we were talking about how there was a sequence of progressing mind. Culture cannot be advanced unless mind is elevated. See, you know, you're thinking of as vertical levels, you're going up. Superior intellect will seek a noble culture and find some way to attain such a goal. Right? Start with yourself. Master the self. Seek first the kingdom of heaven, and all these other things will come about, you know, naturally. Superior intellect will seek a noble culture. That noble culture you like will be a natural consequence. If you have taken delight in cultivating, functioning at higher levels of meaning. Right? Don't start with the outer life. Start with the inner life. Start with yourself.
Exactly.
Don't start by worrying about how that person over there, you know, is, you know, has some work to do. Start with yourself.
You should not forget that for 200,000 years, all the worlds of Satania have rested under the spiritual ban of Nirleshadek in consequence of the Lucifer rebellion. And it will require age upon age to retrieve the resultant handicaps of sin and secession. your world still continues to pursue an irregular and checkered career as a result of the double tragedy of a rebellion, rebellious planetary prince, and a defaulting material son. Even the bestowal of Christ Michael on Urantia did not immediately set aside the temporal consequences of these serious blunders in the earlier administration of the world.
Yeah, so, thinking back to that statement they made in the previous paragraph, paragraph about inferior minds will spurn the highest culture even when presented to them ready-made. Okay, that has a lot to do with the fact that we didn't get the biologic uplift, like they were just reminding us there, the defaulting of the material son. Why it is, since that's the case, that's why it is that, and it will require age upon age to retrieve the result, the resultant handicaps of sin and secession. Right? There's no fiat. Even the Creator Son coming here, it doesn't fundamentally change this fact. Right? That there's going to be inferior minds who will spurn the highest culture even when presented to them ready-made. There's going to be such minds for a long time. And there's no magic wand that Michael or the Universal Father or anyone's going to wave that's going to, change that. It's going to take age upon age. Right? The year of light and life is not, 1,000 years from now or something, or 5 years from now, like some people want it to be. Age upon age it's going to take.
Can read into that bestowal of Christ Michael and the universal bestowal of thought adjusters.
Mm-hmm.
We can read that in there.
Right. Now you notice it doesn't say it did not immediately set aside. And they're reminding you that those are catalytic agents. They have the potential to speed up the process. Right? But that's only if you've supplied the favorable conditions.
It's still a sequential right? process.
You're still going to have to go through the sequence, right?
And here's another catalyst.
Right? There's a lot of people on the planet who have a lot more of the sequence to go through than other people, right? And so we just need to be very patient about this. It's going to take a very long time. It doesn't matter if you can find 10 people who are quivering on the very brink of something really profound. What about the 5 billion, that are still trying to get to the security age? Right? So, all of this stuff to try to, contextualize your spiritual consciousness, to bring some temperance of that zeal into play, to put a bridle, right? On that zeal, pull back on the reins, and like they just stressed there, the easiest way to deal with the situation that we find ourselves in on this planet is to let the outer life be for the moment. Do what Jesus said: seek first the kingdom of heaven. Try to get yourself in synchrony with the Holy Spirit first, right? Which is the foundational meaning of the kingdom of heaven. Start with first things first, and if you begin to be a mastered self, this may redound to the outer life, but not until. Right? No one's going to magically fix the outer life, and then you can just melt into it, and be mastered because of it. All right, so we'll, even though it's just that one little section, it's kind of a fun little one that stands apart that we'll do before we move on. You see what happens next year. We've got the planetary atoms in general to talk about next. So, if you don't feel motivated to do it, I'll encourage you right now. Spend some time using their memory aids and stuff and get those developmental epics committed to memory so that you can think in terms of that sequence. You can understand what's going on in the world around you in the context of that sequence. Right? It'll help you to be objective about things. Right? If all you think is all there is spirit and then there's these black spots, and we just need to erase these black spots. It's like, you know, it's not like that. Well, think in the sequence.
And we'll find a lot of them are blended and
right.
together.
And right.
They're not clear and distinct at all.
Exactly.
Right, which just adds to the time involved in all this,
yeah.
right? Because it's all muddled together, and right, it's just going to take a long time to sort all this out.
There's so many inputs, so many other issues that cause delays.
But fundamentally, you know, you're trying to get the planet to move through this sequence one way or another. That's what's going on. You know, and if you're going to help with progress in the world, you need to help with that sequence. And you might need to get in a much more relative mode with your spiritual consciousness. You know, maybe the step for these people is to try to get from the security age to the material comfort era. And if you want to help them, that's what you should be helping them. It's like, yes, but then they're going to get all in gluttony. That's part of the process, right? Got to keep it in context. All right, let's take a moment here, and we'll finish it up next time.